Hi there, welcome back. So today we're going to follow up on yesterday's discussion. So this is Apollo Studios Business English Advanced Level. And yesterday I was thrilled because we covered quite a lot of ground, didn't we, Paul? We actually got into the nitty-gritty about this diagram, which I think is quite interesting, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how you laid it out.
Thank you. Do you mind reading the title, that kind of white text there?
Yeah, so really what we're discussing is, you know, who do you want to be or who do I want to be during COVID-19?
Do you think that infers that we actually have the power to navigate to a certain degree what our perspective is and to sort of craft fairly consciously an awareness level that is more responsive instead of simply being reactive?
Yeah, I do agree that we are able to do that. So I think like I said yesterday, really, it's about taking the time to actually slow down and first grasp the situation and then accept it. And then from there, not being reactive, but being proactive and really taking your time to respond to the situation. And so you can really choose how you want to respond. It's really your choice.
What do you think of people when they're stuck in that fear zone level? What do you think their biggest need is to get out of the fear zone and into the learning zone?
I feel like the fear zone is a place that people can sort of be trapped when they don't understand why things are happening and can't comprehend that the things that are happening are actually happening. And so it's more of a shock to them that really sets them there. And I feel like when you're in that zone, it's hard to get out of it because you're sort of in that loop. So you're basically giving yourself feedback that this is a terrible situation, and that keeps feeding. And then you feel like you're just stuck in this whole situation, which won't get any better. And then that's really why they feel so scared and intimidated by the situation. And they find it difficult to get out or perhaps even escape.
So I'm hearing that maybe you're implying that it's through access to more information that people are able to move forward out of that zone and into the learning zone.
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's access to information that allows people to move from the fear zone to the learning zone.
How can that apply to somebody that is running their own startup and wants to actually approach clientele in a way that will reassure clients that business can still be conducted during COVID-19, but perhaps in an adapted way? What tools and understandings could a small business provider offer their clientele in terms of updating them on how business can be conducted regardless of certain restrictions? You know, is it about the way we communicate with our clientele?
I think communication would definitely play a key part. You would want to allow or help your customers to still have confidence in you or in your business. And really, the key way to doing that, what I believe, and this is all opinion, by the way, is really just transparent communication and just openly communicating what is going on behind the scenes, but also taking the initiative to look at what opportunities or what options you have in front of you with the situation that you're facing. So whether that be, you know, you might have to digitize more than before. So if your business was more physical, now you might have to look at ways to make it digital. And it could be other ways as well, but really just transparently communicating that, and also conveying how you can still offer value to your clients, to your customers, and that would allow your business, I guess, to maybe not thrive, but do the best that it can in the current situation.
Yeah. I mean, one example is that I spoke with a retailer this morning in Melbourne CBD, and she said, look, you know what? She said, keeping my fashion store open at this point in time is more like a marketing activity. It's more like an ad. It's more like an advertisement for my brand, because while I may be running a little bit of a loss or barely breaking even, it's letting people know the lights are on, there is someone home, and we're going to be here as per usual. Yes, with restrictions on the number of clients that are allowed to venture in to her little cute Melbourne CBD shop.
Yep.
And yes, with the temperature check at the door, which I applaud her for offering, because it serves the customer's needs as well. I think everyone appreciates knowing what their temperature is, just for reference sake.
Exactly, yeah.
Et cetera. She's very diligent. And I think, well, it's still putting forward a customer service experience, even if some customers are just popping in to browse and see what's, you know, available. It's planting that deep seed, which I think is interesting. And it is almost like an ad for her shop, so that when things do return to a more normalized type of business, then she'll already be in the loop, you know. What do you think about that approach?
Yeah, and yeah, I think she is keeping proactive. So that's really allowing her to take advantage of whatever opportunities there are in this current situation. And so I think that's a great example of a business looking at new ways to conduct or sell themselves. And through that, you know, possibly after all of this is over, then those are the businesses that won't just continue normal activity, but will actually expand and grow because of what they've learned from the situation.
Definitely. So they've shown that resilience, they're holding on to their consistency, the brand loyalty is more easily developed. And I think that for a lot of people that have been in isolation or have only been able to interact with a certain core group, having a friendly face, having a bit of light banter with a really great customer service provider in a store, it's an emotionally enriching experience. And when people can't see their colleagues at work or whatnot, I think people crave that sense of community.
Definitely, I do agree that. We're all humans. At the end of the day, you know, isolation does have an impact on all of us. It might be less for some people, it might be more, but in the end, it still affects us, and we all crave that, I guess, human connection.
Right.
And so being in this situation, being deprived of that, having those little interactions where with a customer service provider or whoever else that you're interacting with, whether it be, you know, over the phone or in a store which has a limit of 10 people, it's still great to know that, you know, we're able to still have those interactions and still feel I guess just connected to the world.
Definitely. So it feeds the client's need for recognition, and it feeds a client's needs for feeling like they actually belong to something, which psychologists in a Harvard study, I think 5 years ago, identified is actually the strongest of all human needs, to feel a sense of belonging to something. And yeah. I think that in a post-church society per se, since the power of, I guess, you know, the largest Christian churches has diminished in the West after Vatican II in the 1960s, etc., I think that people connect with, again, there are more, you know, studies proving people find a similarly spiritual high by connecting through sports teams, through brand names of their favorite products, through being part of a VIP shopping club that communicates with them online, or, you know, has special VIP events, etc. Some psychologists say that even the design of shopping centers and shopping malls mimics the grandeur and the scale of cathedrals, and the type of vast shiny surfaces and the, you know, use of gold and glass and whatnot is designed to mimic that elevated experience. And I think this is fascinating. I guess one is reminded of when Chairman Mao in China actually said that while the focus under his administration, shall we say, was to shift away from spirituality in society, his comment was, "That's okay, I'm going to give them a new god." What he meant was, yeah, what he meant was money.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people might say, well, the panicked response of a lot of people, especially in the West, I think, regarding loss of income or, you know, limitations on their income during COVID-19, it mimics a sense of a spiritual loss. And I think this is an insight into what consumers actually need. They crave a spiritual experience. So if you, as a small business service provider, are able to meet emotional needs, human interaction needs of clients, you know what? They'll be yours forever, because not everybody actually is able to develop that level of rapport. Not everyone is actually willing to take the time to grasp a client by their heartstrings and to remember their name and to remember a little bit about them. And retail now is highly competitive, and to make a brand different from what kind of experience a consumer can have online, it's definitely an art form these days. So, for example, when I lived in Hong Kong, Paul, I noticed that there were certain fashion brands who completely redesigned the interior of their fashion stores in competition with online shopping. They created store interiors that were absolutely opulent. They were inviting. They were welcoming. They offered free coffee. Some of them offered free champagne. It was aggressive marketing. Yep, there was velvet, there were gold furnishings. It was next level, and it was absolutely working. And there were little curtained off rooms where clients could choose to try on their clothes, you know, at their own leisure. I'd never seen anything quite like it, and I was absolutely impressed with the lengths that they went to.
Yeah,
I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It reminded me of a Baroque salon where you might go to visit a tailor, you know, or some sort of couturier, you know. It was absolutely unbelievable. It was just such a luxurious environment.
Really just elevating the experience.
Yep, definitely. You know?
Yeah.
It was as opulent as the Vatican. It was unbelievably decorated, you know?
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
So you know what they're actually doing. Yeah. And it worked. It totally, you know.
It's like an Apple store, because the Apple stores are really inviting, but an Apple store on steroids.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is it about the customer service that you particularly notice in Apple, for example? How do they approach you?
In Apple?
Yeah.
To be honest, I'm not the best person to ask, because I haven't really entered an Apple store. I have a Google phone.
How are you finding it?
My phone's quite good. But for the times that I have been into the Apple store, I think once or twice with other people, I feel like first off, like you said, it's really the atmosphere that sets the mood.
Yeah.
And it makes you want to go in there and really just explore. Because the Apple store, you see the Apple stores around, and they're incredibly large and inviting. They're like, it's just really spacious. The lighting is bright. There's some sort of greenery going on in the background as well. And it just looks busy, but it just looks warm and sort of inviting.
Yeah.
It looks like you really just want to go in there, look at every gadget. And then speaking to the customer service there, I mean, I've only spoken to a couple, but I feel like if the ones that I got weren't just lucky, then yeah, Apple does really pick the best people for providing customer service in terms of being good listeners, I think most importantly, and really trying to provide you the most value that they can in terms of what they think your needs are and from what they've gained from speaking with you.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that light and bright and clean and welcoming interior is reflective of the brand as well. It mimics the design elements of the products. And I think this is interesting. I think no matter what country I've lived in, the Apple stores, as you say, hire people whom greet every newcomer with a smile, eye contact, body language. You know, it's very much always on brand. It's consistently delivered, and I'm really impressed with that.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to do that worldwide.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah. I feel like there's definitely a strong screening process there.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be their training as well, really.
I agree.
Yeah.
They've trained them really well. And I think, well, you know, good on them. It's working.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the biggest brands in the world. So, yeah.
I like that they also use a fairly low-key sales technique. They're not trying to chase you down or hunt you down to make a sale. They give you a lot of psychological space, and I find that quite interesting too. So you can actually find them using a little bit of reverse psychology, which is fascinating. Pretending you don't want something so as to make that thing happen can actually work really well in sales.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like now that you mentioned that, my visits have been not forceful in any way. When I've been engaging with the customer service consultants there, they've really let me, I think a good word is to say, explore every single product that I want to. And so I think what Apple is aiming for is just having people really explore all their products. And then I think a key reason is because they believe in their product so much.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a key reason. So they don't mind if we want to explore because I feel like that's what they want us to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that sort of builds on the psychology of how they approach sales as well.
Yeah.
Because they have that knowledge that, you know, their product is that good or that high quality.
Yeah. They know you want what they've got, so they can
exactly. To
step back and enjoy the ride. And that is also alluring and intriguing, that concept of using the law of least effort, which Deepak Chopra talks about in his book, Ageless Body, Timeless Mind. He says, employ the law of least effort to get what you want. Make a small effort, then step back and watch the magic happen. And I think, well, this is interesting because it actually goes against that Western Calvinist concept of struggle and, you know, hard work conquering all. It's more about a kind of Taoist concept of living in a state of flow. And I think it's quite fascinating to embrace that.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
For me, this is where I see people entering the growth zone, which on our chart you can see here is the final section. I think of the others and see how to help them. So in this stage of awareness during COVID-19, you can see that well, and people actually move forward into the growth zone. They make their talents available to those who need them. I've noticed a lot of people offering voluntary work. I've noticed a lot of people offering food supplies for the needy. And I've noticed with Optus brand, people even donating data for school children who might need a little boost in terms of availability of internet data and phone data so they can keep studying at home. I think this is really interesting, don't you?
Yeah, I feel like once you're in that zone,
then
that's really when you're looking at how can I not just accept what's going on, but how can I move forward and even help others around me?
Mm-hmm.
And with Optus, I think that's a great example with the data sharing, but also with the what they're providing, what they provided in April, which was allowing those who are working at home, because a lot of us had to, allowing those people to get extra data to get their work done or to do more work, and also just in other aspects as well. What other people are doing. For example, on LinkedIn, there's a lot of people, a lot of professionals that are offering free professional advice to, you know, upcoming graduates or students that are looking for internships.
Great. And
those people are really just taking the initiative to reach out to those that are in need. And I feel like that's great. I feel like that's really when you expand yourself, even though you're in a tough situation.
Mm-hmm. So in that regard, we could see, well, notwithstanding obviously the perils and tragedy of this era as far as deaths and illnesses, which is heartbreaking.
Definitely.
We can see, on the other hand, there could even be some sort of intellectual renaissance or some sort of positive outcome, in the same way that Sir Isaac Newton actually developed many scientific discoveries while he was quarantined.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In the countryside. And during historical periods of quarantine, there have actually been a number of amazing scientific discoveries made. Why? Because people whom rise to the challenge of being squirreled away and having extra time on their hands. People who are choosing to develop their interests and hobbies into something quite productive, I think can make quite a bit of headway with the extra available time on their hands, providing they don't allow themselves to get overwhelmed or, you know, inconvenienced too much by the logistics or the emotional side of focusing for many hours, often, you know, with a limited number of people around you or even on your own. I think that a lot of people are able to thrive, not just survive, in these kind of environments.
That's interesting. Yeah, definitely. I feel like, yeah, there would definitely be a number of people who are going to, I guess, benefit from this, and not even in just a monetary sense, but self-growth as well, just personal development. And that, yeah, that can come in many forms, and that can come from many, I guess, many actions as well. So whatever actions that you choose, for example, like I said, those on LinkedIn providing free services, or those that you mentioned who are helping those who don't have food to, I guess, just have those groceries and those supplies to use. And I think that can manifest itself in self-growth, which I think is much more important in a sense.
I agree with you. And I think that this is key to understanding where clients are at as well, realizing that some people really are thriving and some people are struggling. And I think that by never assuming that we personally may know for sure what our clients are actually experiencing within those variables is also very important as well. So to have empathy, and here we can see on the chart, it says in the growth zone, I'm empathetic with myself and with others. So to have empathy literally means to feel along with, to feel with someone and to not judge that person's feelings, but to actually put oneself in their shoes directly. Sympathy, on the other hand, is a different word because it means to feel sorry for someone. Okay. Whereas empathy means to feel along with and to align with. So I think empathy in this regard can be a more profound way of relating. And it's a very gentle but powerful type of connection to have. You know, I think from an approach of empathy, you know, we can better understand what clients actually need and want. So, for example, a lot of my friends who are also writers and teachers, etc., have already been working online quite a bit for years and have had, you know, very fortunately, little if any change to income. So to have strangers in a shop or other, you know, acquaintances make assumptions and kind of say to people in that boat, oh yeah, this is such a horrible time and everyone's stressed, aren't they? Everyone's having an awful time. You know, if as a small business service provider, a person is wanting to make small talk with their clients, which is very important, you know, for most of them, if they're open to that, I think it's dangerous to make projections or assumptions about what that person is actually experiencing, because some people are actually thriving in these times. And I think that, you know, some of my friends and colleagues have actually said, well, they almost feel guilty about the fact that, you know, while a person in a shop might be saying to them, you know, well, how are you going, you know, and answering for them and saying, well, yeah, you know, everyone's stressed, aren't they? And my friend saying to me, oh, I almost felt ashamed to say that, well, I'm someone who actually isn't stressed at the moment.
And yeah.
I'm not freaking out. And this is my usual life anyway, to be working from home primarily, and enjoying the lack of pollution and enjoying the lack of crowds. And for some people,
yeah,
they're already in their natural habitat anyway. So I think there can be a danger in assuming that we know what clients are actually going through, you know, and vice versa, obviously, you know. I think it's better to ask the client, you know, if you're running a shop or, you know, providing some sort of professional service, it's better to just ask them, well, how are you? And really listen, just show active listening, which is what you mentioned with Apple.
Definitely, yeah. And I definitely agree there as well. I mean, a level of empathy should always be shown. I mean, not in just this situation, not with just COVID-19, but, you know, throughout whatever it is, that should always be there. But it's also important, as you said, to not generalize too much and to say, you know, well, this is a horrible situation, because other people might really be thriving, as you said. And I've experienced that. I've spoken to people where I've been careful to not say, you know, whatever this situation is, this is, it's painted this way or that way, but rather just asking, you know, are you working from home now, or, you know, or how's working from home? And then from there, just really gauging, and that's how you sort of build a connection, because everyone is really different, and not everyone is having a bad time. Some people are having a grand time. So,
correct. I think that's a much better approach. I like the way that you pitch that. And I think, you know, also being able to offer people the psychological space to actually say, well, listen, how are you going these days? And how's your routine? How's your schedule working out? That way as well, it can cover off, you know, the variable of a client perhaps not having a job at the moment, you know, and if they've actually lost their job or if they've been laid off, by saying to them, hey, you know, how's your schedule going? You know, have you had many changes? Anything you want to talk about, or anything I can help you with in terms of the products that we've got here or whatnot? And, you know, are you having a pretty good week? And just sort of opening up the floor. And I think Aussies appreciate a little bit of psychological space, because that way, if you ask in a fairly indirect way by saying, oh, are you having a pretty good week? That way they can either launch into a detailed response, or if they want to keep it fairly, you know, discreet, they can just say, yeah, pretty good, and just, you'll read it from their body language, etc., or their tone of voice over the phone or whatnot. You know, you'll gauge whether or not they want to engage in more or less small talk with you, and I think that's very important, you know.
Exactly. And yeah, you always want to make them feel comfortable. I think that's the most important.
Yeah, you do. Exactly. You know, they could be in a successful moment, or they could be carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders that particular afternoon or what have you. And I think that sensitivity goes a long way.
Exactly. Yeah. And you would never know. Exactly.
Yep. And I think that once you are doing business for a while, and if you're running your own startup, you'll start to sort of see patterns in people's behavior. And if you're small enough as a business to have the option of running a lot of the business functions yourself, you actually have the opportunity to get a lot more insight than you might were you constantly working for somebody else for your whole life. I'm not saying that you can't learn just as much in other ways, but I'm just saying that, look, you've really got the fly on the wall opportunity if you're running your own small business to be a jack of all trades or Jill of all trades and actually interact with the public, with your clients, whether it's online or in person or on Zoom chats, etc., and find out what the status quo is in your industry. If you're out there on the ground in a retail store, it's actually the perfect place to have basically a barometer on what society is going through, what the rhythm of the economy is at any point in time, you know, which is golden for the rest of your business life, because you can start to read trends and you can start to become an expert body language reader as well because of the hours spent in observation.
Definitely, I agree.
Yeah, this is irreplaceably useful.
I do agree. I would say that if for any students out there, try a job in retail and not just a job where it's like, not just like stocking or whatnot, stock take, but one where you're really in a customer facing role. I feel like personally it's been a great place for me to develop both my oral and written communication skills, because I feel like they really connect together.
Do you think that also for young people, if they were considering improving their English and improving their communication skills and improving their confidence, should they try something like, you know, as COVID-19 hopefully eases off, you know, working in a restaurant, working in a cafe, something like that?
Yeah, I think that's a incredibly wise decision to make, actually. If you feel like you lack confidence, if you feel like you're uncomfortable speaking to people, well, the best way is really to just get out there and have those experiences. And then after that, once you have that experience, you can keep iterating upon how you communicate. And then after that, you will just eventually become better. It's a natural process where you sort of start to understand the back and forth sway of conversation.
Definitely. I had a student at a university and she said to me that she was concerned because in group discussions she felt painfully shy, and I suggested, well, even if financially you're fairly set, what about taking one shift a week at a little cafe in your neighborhood if you feel comfortable with the idea, if your parents are on board with that, to improve your communication skills? And that's exactly what she did. And she tried it out and she explained her situation. She said, look, I'm just looking for one shift a week and I don't have any experience and I'm willing to, you know, offer you a tryout for a couple of hours, you know, and then if if we find that we're a match, maybe we can talk. And they loved her, and she turned out to be really much more confident after 6 months. I was so proud of her. She really stepped up, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, well, this is an interesting way to put oneself out there, and it improved her involvement in her university discussions as well. And now she actually works in PR.
Oh, wow.
A fashion brand.
Yeah.
In Sydney, and she's doing really, really well.
That's incredible.
Uh-huh. So you never know where it can take you. That as you mentioned, Paul, being able to have opportunities to observe how conversations unfold and how to present oneself, you know, in the best light, how to navigate emotional responses to challenging customer service experiences as well, how to deal with boredom, how to deal with, on the other hand, being really, really busy, or how to deal with colleagues. These are irreplaceably useful for your whole life, you know.
Yeah, all right. 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Do you mind reading through the other one? Hang on a minute. Let's see. We've got a couple more points here to just take a look at. I thank and appreciate. I keep. I look for. I practice. Would you mind reading through those before we wrap it up?
Yeah, no worries. So, give me a second. But, I thank and appreciate others. I keep a happy emotional state and spread hope.
Mm.
I look for a way to adapt to new changes, mm-hmm. and I practice quietude, patience, relationships, and creativity.
Wow. I mean, these are just great tips for living in general, aren't they? You know, to thank and appreciate others is key, I think, to developing an atmosphere of mutual respect wherever we are, you know. In business, I think it's absolutely essential, don't you?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, these are all qualities that are so transferable. You know, not even in business, not just in business, but really throughout your whole life, in every aspect of your life. You know, that could be friends, family, business, and yeah, it's just so important to be able to first off, I guess, just be confident in yourself and be comfortable in whatever situation you are in, and know that you have the power to choose the trajectory that you want to be on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to really keep a happy emotional state and spread hope, and to look for ways to adapt to new changes, and to practice quietude, patience, relationships, and creativity. I think a lot of these come down to having a daily practice that supports you, getting enough sleep, getting good nutrition, drinking enough water, taking care of your health, taking care of your fitness level, managing your own stress levels in a way that will allow you physiologically to respond to your best ability. And I think, well, I think that's a given. I would have thought it was common sense, but I think it's easier said than done. And I think, well, with maturity comes an awareness that, look, the buck stops with me. I can choose to, as we said yesterday, I can choose to either react or respond. And I don't have to react to every external thing that is happening. I can actually choose to respond as and when appropriate.
Yep.
But this is an interesting point of power and the point of peacefulness as well, which is absolutely groundbreaking. And I think it's a point of progression when we look for a way to adapt to new changes. We can actually fearlessly move forward in life in general. So that, hey, if and when there's a COVID 2021, well, guess what? God forbid, touch wood.
Yeah.
You know, then we've already seen ourselves develop adaptive behaviors, and we can say to ourselves, oh, okay, last time this happened, you know what I did that I really liked, and you know what I did that I didn't like, and let's tweak things so that we can navigate the the next one, God forbid, but or the next challenge in life to navigate it more successfully.
You know? 100%. It's really just taking the initiative or that first step into at least trying to, I guess, first off, release control and then have it back because you are comfortable with where you're at. And just taking that first step will allow you to really just, I guess, be more reflective because you're more, I guess, contemplative. And so you can think about things more clearly and with that respond, I guess, just in better ways than if you were simply reacting. And I think that's a great thing, and that everyone could benefit from that.
Absolutely. Nurturing strength of spirit to shield oneself in the face of sudden dangers, which is straight out of the Desiderata. And to practice quietude, patience, relationships, and creativity. What a great combo. I mean, it doesn't get better than that in the workplace, in the home, in society. You know? And then to expand that sense of harmony into something creative is the icing on the cake. To produce some art, to rearrange your room so that it's tidy and aesthetically pleasing, to add a few flowers from the garden or something like that. What a joy. And to create an environment that can support you emotionally. Because there's a great saying from the Olympian swimmer, Lisa Curry. She said, if you're stressed, it means you're simply less organized than you could be. I'll say it again. If you're stressed, it means you're simply less organized than you could be. I think this is very true. You know, to clean up our workspace, to clean up our home, to actually do a Marie Kondo and ditch anything that doesn't spark joy and basically clear the decks and be very much like the military or a monk and really minimalize, you know, be very minimalist and minimize our possessions and to actually declutter. This is another point of power. And in the workplace, if you're running a small business, this is key to staying calm.
I agree. That's a good point for sure. And like you said, just having first off that quietude and then patience, relationships, and then with the icing on top being creativity. That's really just the perfect combo. Where you're able to first off just relish in I guess being accepting of all that's happening, and especially with yourself, and then really focusing your energy on creating and on producing something, and that's when you really provide, I guess, value as well. And that's when you're able to start your, I guess, journey.
Pretty much, because they say that, look, the only things we leave behind are our art and our children. So if you don't have one or the other, well, then you can, create something else. But the point is, this could be your legacy. If you think of your small business, if you're starting one as an entrepreneur, it really is like a work of art. It's your baby, as it were. And I think, well, that's brilliant. And to even consider the concept of a 100-year business plan, don't laugh. Okay, I'm laughing.
Oh, I just laughed.
Right. Some cultures actually factor in a 100-year business plan.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Can you guess which cultures around the world are open to the option of thinking that far ahead?
100 years. I'm guessing it's Asian.
Correct.
China, for one.
Correct.
Japan.
Correct. Yeah.
I think those are like the two.
Yeah.
Most, yeah. They're like Zen.
The two sort of top cats of forward planning, I guess, in that way. I don't think they really think of a dynasty. They really think of the idea of your children's children's children. And you know what? If you're someone whom is child-free by choice or for whatever other reason doesn't have children of their own per se, well, you can offer a legacy to society, okay? Even in a small way, even in the tiniest way, putting out positivity and adding to service consciousness in your community has actually a lasting effect on society, because history will see you, time will see you doing the smallest deeds in a manner of mindfulness, which is fascinating because this impacts others. It is the ripple effect. It is the concept that we're actually able to positively impact others around us. And this can be very inspiring. Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know, if on the other hand, you do have actual children, well and good. Why not offer them the option to come and work with you or even intern with you if their heart is in another profession or something like that? You know, there's no harm in at least offering them the option to tune into what it is you do and give them an example of someone who is working consciously and creatively towards self-actualization, towards serving the community through their work.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And really, when you talk about the legacy, that's the long term, like the 100-year plan. But also, when you're there and you're doing those things that that will leave that legacy, that would already make you feel good as well.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, just being in the moment, even so, not just not planning that far ahead, but also planning far ahead, but also being in the moment and making sure that you're experiencing every moment and taking every opportunity. That will allow you to, in my opinion, leave a legacy and also to just feel good in the meanwhile as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's really only the present moment that is the one we have to pay attention to anyway. So 100 years later can take care of itself.
Exactly.
As we focus on one day at a time of awareness, then the 100 years will unfold along those lines anyway.
But exactly.
It's, if nothing else, entertaining to consider that in 100 years' time, great brands, and I'm going to say it, even if the brand of, you know, Virgin Airlines has been going through turmoil, or even if it literally collapses and disappears per se, you know what? The legacy of running a business in such an innovative way will never disappear. And I think that when I met and interviewed Richard Branson in Shanghai a few years ago, inspiration and joy that was tangible in the air around him is unforgettable. And if you read his books, if you're an entrepreneur, you'll know what I'm talking about. And in that way, it actually doesn't even matter if his brands go the distance in the literal sense, because it's his concept and his methodology of running business in such a new way that is his actual legacy. For me, that's actually more important. What is burned into my memory from Richard is his concept that if you put your staff first, everything else falls into place. And this was a bit of a groundbreaking concept at the time when he first started writing his books, because a lot of business philosophy was based on the idea that the customer is always right, the customer is always first. But actually with his airlines, he put forward the idea of treating your staff like gold and putting them first so that they feel so good that they will actually put the customer first anyway, because they feel so great and they know that they feel so supported by their boss. I think this is amazing. I think this is really interesting. And he would often back his staff if there was a difficult customer or if there was a customer that was abusive to one of his airline crew. Back when his airline was still small enough for him to personally have a lot more interaction. And following on from that, he trained his HR teams to continue his concept of having your staff's back and supporting them, you know, not attacking them if there was a complaint, but trying to calmly find out how things could be done differently next time, but giving staff the benefit of the doubt, and they will and do and have, you know, step up to that and stepped up to that, you know, because he offered them the trust and support first, then they behaved and behave in a trustworthy manner. So I think this is interesting. When an entrepreneur initiates great leadership by assuming and acting as though it can be assumed that the staff are great and treating them in a way that makes them feel great, and guess what? The service level becomes and stays great.
Yeah, no, that's very true, I would say. And that's why I think so many firms these days, or so many companies these days, are really trying to sell that point to potential employees. It's not about really, I mean, it's still about the brand, but it's also more about how human the workplace is as well.
Definitely.
And how valued they are, really.
Yeah. They feel valued.
Because from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. From that, it all flows on. The business will, I guess, will take care of itself, given that it's a good business.
Hear, hear. So, from fear to growth, who we want to be and whom we identify our customers as being during COVID-19 can be a metaphor for life. And I want to put forward an essay topic as a writing competition for everyone that is affiliated with Apollo Studios. I'm going to write up on our Facebook page a topic, and if you want to choose to write a response to the topic question connected to what we've been discussing here, well, the winner is going to get a little gift voucher prize, and we'll have their essay published on our website. So that's something to look forward to. If anyone wants to write a response and use some of the vocabulary that we've been kind of practicing a little bit, I guess, through this discussion. What do you think about that one, Paul?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. If there are any people, well, if there's anyone out there who wants to, I guess put to use what they've learned, then this would be a great opportunity.
Awesome.
And you get a little prize.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is important.
It is actually. All right, that's it for today. Thanks so much for your input. It's been amazing.
Perfect. No worries. Thanks, Christina.
Okay.
See you soon. My pleasure. See ya.
Bye.